Joining me right now, folks, is a very special guest. He was a guest on the Sound of Freedom podcast back in October, and we're really happy to have him back here to cover some important information. I'm talking about Mr. Ole Damagord, who is the author of Coup d'etat in Slow Motion, and his website is lightonconspiracies.com. Really happy to have Ole Damagord joining us. Ole, how are you?
I'm super good, thank you. I'm very blessed.
Good to hear back from you, Ole, and have you on the show here. I know when we talked yesterday, just kind of mentioned what you've been spending some of your time doing here recently as far as researching and talking to other folks about, as far as some interesting revelations about John Lennon, Bob Marley, and Jimi Hendrix. Can you go ahead and let everybody know what you've found regarding those gentlemen?
The reason I've been giving a lot of interviews lately about this is because it was the anniversary of the assassination of John Lennon just a few days ago.
Right.
And one of the things I found during these 30 years of research that I put down is that I've been able to connect very many of these major political events or assassinations that had been done over the years. And I've been able to connect the JFK assassination, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Oklahoma City, 9/11, the assassination of John Lennon, Bob Marley, Che Guevara, Paolo Neruda, the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme, Robert Smith in South Africa, the overthrow of Salvador Allende, the Iran-Contras, and the bombing of Orlando Letier in Washington. This might sound like quite a bit of a mouthful to come up with, but the thing is that this global elite that is causing so much trouble in the world at the moment, they have been using the same team of assassins from the late 50s all the way up until today almost. And if they're not still being used, the ones that are still alive, they're now training new generations of assassins and so on. And this group that I'm talking about, it went under the name of Operation 40. It was created in the late 1950s, early 1960s, under the control of under the order of President Dwight Eisenhower, who gave the task to his vice president, Richard Nixon, to put together this team of highly skilled assassins that could be used to take out foreign leaders or whoever they had a problem with. At that time, it was Fidel Castro that they were aiming at. But later on, this group have just been used all over the place. And this group consisted, to start with, of about 40 exiled Cubans, mostly exiled Cubans, that came from the Batista regime. They were former military, Air Force, police officers, and so on, that had escaped from Cuba to Miami and other places in the States. And they were joined there by high-ranking officers from the CIA. Some of the main characters there were Ted, the blonde ghost, Shackley, who's involved in multiple assassinations and covert operations and fall flag all over the world. Another man was E. Howard Hunt, who's very famous for his involvement in the JFK assassination, but also the Watergate burglary and many other cases as well. And another guy called by the name of David Attlee Phillips. This David Attlee Phillips, he later became chief of operation for the Western Hemisphere for CIA, meaning that he was an absolute top CIA guy. And the thing with this group is that people from this group, I can name all of them and go into bit details if you want to, but people from this group have been taking part of so many of these assassinations over the years. And so people that were actually present in Dealey Plaza when JFK was shot, there was one that was even present 23 years later in Stockholm when the Swedish Prime Minister was gunned down. He was part of the team and also part of the he wasn't part of the team, but he was part of recruiting assassins in Sweden. They needed a local support there. But we have, for instance, there's one man, his name was David Morales. He was also a high-ranking CIA operative who was in Dealey Plaza, not one of the shooters, but he was part of the conspiracy. He was also present at the Ambassador Hotel with some other CIA people when they took out Robert Kennedy and blamed it on the Patsy Sirhan. He was also in Bolivia when another member of the Operation 40 called Felix Rodriguez was given the task by George Bush Sr. to track down, it wasn't only George Bush Sr., but he was given the task to track down Fidel Castro's friend Che Guevara. They found him and they tracked him down with some local military people, and then Felix Rodriguez ordered David Morales to kill him, and he was the one who shot him. Felix Rodriguez, to this very day, as far as I know, he's carrying Che Guevara's wrist very proudly. This Felix Rodriguez was also very central in the Iran-Contra scandal, together with other people from Operation 40, like Barry Seals, who was one of the main pilots who was flying weapons out from the States, from the National Guard, stolen there, and then transported down to Nicaragua, where they were delivered to the Contras army that was backed by the U.S. And then on the return, the planes were filled up with heavy, heavy drugs.
Right.
These drugs were then delivered to, at one point, they were delivered to a small town in Arkansas by the name of Mena. And it was it wasn't really an airport, it was more like an airstrip, but that's where all these planes were coming in with tons and tons of heavy drugs. And one of the people who were receiving this, who was a quite unknown governor by the time, his name was Bill Clinton.
Right.
And he was the guy who was receiving these transports together with his partner, Dan Lasseter, together in cooperation with George Bush Sr. And then from there on, these drugs were distributed all over the country to the gangs in Los Angeles and all over the place, where the whole idea was to destabilize the American society and get the crime rate up, so that you could justify a much more militant police and fill the jails. Where the jails is also something, private jails, something they've invested millions in and making absolute billions from getting them filled and just ripping the population off for all the payments for having these jails and so on.
Yeah, it's amazing, Ole. I tell you, when I realized or learned about the for-profit prison system in the U.S. And then seeing the correlation of the war on drugs brought to us by Richard Nixon, and then also the incredible rise in the inmate population in the United States, the highest in the world. And what you're breaking down, just phenomenal. I mean, can you clarify, because I was going to ask you, and you kind of already answered it, but the involvement of this Operation 40 and the CIA, it sounds like they are heavily intertwined from what I'm hearing you say, and that if anything, are you saying that these Operation 40 people are kind of like they do the dirty work for the CIA type of thing, or could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, they were the top team that were being used by the CIA and other people, especially George Bush Sr. George Bush Sr. was, from day one, he was the so-called paymaster for this group. He was the guy who brought in the money from the military-industrial complex, from oil tycoons in Texas, and from the government, and also big companies that wanted to gain access to many different countries and South America and so on. So this Operation 40 was used on a very, very regular basis. Also, another member from this Operation 40 was a man called Porter Goss, who in later years became the director of the CIA under George Bush.
Right.
So, but you got another one. There was, do you know the night when John Lennon was shot? He had just come from the studio, and they had just recorded his new album. It was the sort of a long wished for comeback that he was just doing. He had been away for years, And they just came from the studio. They arrived to the Dakota building in New York. And the guy that is claimed to have shot John Lennon was standing to the right. His name was Mark Chapman. And he was standing to the right of the limo. And when first Yoko Ono left the car and started walking into the building, and then John Lennon followed some 5-6 meters after her. The thing is that Mark Chapman was standing to the right. And when John Lennon, when he on his way in towards the building, several shots were fired, and he was hit at least 4 times directly from the left. Chapman was standing to the right. So the big question is, who, with Farmer Brown's logic, you look at where did the shots come from? And at that very evening, the doorman, a nice-looking elderly gentleman by the name of José Perdomo, was working as a doorman at this building. And José Perdomo, when you track him down, he was the highest ranking officer in Operation 40 for almost 10 years. So what are the chances that this guy is positioned exactly from where the shots are fired, and he's one of these highly skilled assassins? You can find this guy's name in the first articles. And also, I think if you go to WikiLeaks and so on, his name will be mentioned. And it just say he's a former CIA operative, and that he was the one who ran forward towards Mark Chapman and took away the gun from him. But what he did was, in my opinion, was Chapman was one of these mind-controlled people that they use on a regular basis, not to do the actual killing, but to take the fall for them.
Right.
Because they can't trust them to do a proper job. But what they can do is put them away and take the blame for it. And this, you can see there's a very clear pattern of how they behave, people that are being put through this. And very often they're triggered by keywords, and once they're triggered, they stand and wait like zombies, just waiting to get picked up, you know. So, and Mark Chapman did exactly the same. He was just standing there like a zombie waiting for the police to come and pick him up. And from then on, he's just been repeating the same story almost word by word. Every time he talks about it, it's like a tape recording that just goes round and round, no emotions. And sometimes even like Sirhan, who was the patsy for the killing of Robert Kennedy.
Right.
He doesn't even have a recollection of that night. He has no memories from the event or anything like that. And this is very typical for these people who have gone through this awful thing.
Right. Sounds like the Monarch Project, MK Ultra, once again. I mean, and you
this
look at
movies. This is exactly what I'm talking about.
Look at movies like The Manchurian Candidate with Denzel Washington. I mean, that's basically they're showing us through our popular culture, our movies and TV, how they do it and what they're doing. And it's just incredible when you start looking into these things, especially with the John Lennon assassination and Mark David Chapman. All the telltale signs are there of being a patsy, as crazy as that sounds. Incredible stuff, Ole. Now, do you cover things like this in your book, Coup d'etat in Slow Motion, or have you put pen to paper regarding the assassination of John Lennon, where folks can maybe pick up your book and read more about that?
The main focus is on the assassination of Olof Palme, but also the Swedish Prime Minister. But it was not a Swedish assassination. It was done by the same group, the same global elite who were behind all of these other ones. So there's a lot of threads going all over the place, to South Africa, to many different other assassinations. And in the end of the book, I point out the connections. I describe many of the members in Operation 40, how they were involved. And I also have names and pictures of more or less all of the people who were involved in the assassination of JFK, all the shooters, where they were positioned, who were the spotters, who were the walkie-talkie people, escape cars, how they got in and out, and so on. But
right.
it's I tell you, once you get into this world, it's mind-boggling when you start to see the how much these people have been involved in.
Absolutely, and I tell you just quickly about the JFK assassination. I know that was the the hot topic here over the past month or so with the anniversary. But to see that amongst the masses in America, the majority of the American population, we have seen now an all-time low as far as polls they've taken that show the American people what they believe, an all-time low in the number of Americans that believe there was a conspiracy with the JFK assassination. However, that number is still 61% of people polled, but that's down from 81% over the past few years. So I think that it's just so important to find information like you've presented, Ole, with the research you've done and the books you've written, to find things like that, hold on to them ourselves, and use those as tools to help teach others when they start asking us questions. Because I just feel like in my lifetime, by the time I'm an old man, Ole, the assassination of JFK is going to seem like the assassination of McKinley. You know, like who? No big deal. So thank you so much for just giving us that update there about the Operation 40. And folks, there's a reason why I'm going to try to keep bringing Ole back here, is because he's got incredible information. And his book, Coup d'etat in Slow Motion, I mean, is just mind-boggling. Like you said, Ole, I'm over here just saying the same thing. Just in the interest of time here, I want to kind of change directions here and get into false flag terror, because I know that you've done a lot of research on false flag terror. First, can I ask you, what is your belief, or your opinion rather, to my understanding that they will bring another false flag attack, being that more people are starting to ask questions, more people are starting to wake up, the dollar is dying, the economy is crumbling. I feel that we will be left with no choice but to implement another false flag that's going to make September 11th look like kids' play. What are your thoughts on that?
I really, really hope that you're totally wrong when it comes to that. I think that the elite, since there's such an awakening going on, and I would like to mention also these polls that you're talking about, who are making them, who
Great
are presenting
point.
Them,
right.
Because they will try to, even if it was like 98% of the people saying, my God, there was a conspiracy, they would go out officially saying maybe 32, you know, so this is
right.
Another one, you shouldn't listen to that at all. I think they're getting really very, very worried and desperate in many ways because of this awakening that is going on. Because, I mean, very few people can still believe that nothing strange is going on, because it's on such a scale that, I mean, even the most asleep person is at a point where they will just say, my God, what is going on? The whole world has just gone crazy.
Right.
But it's like, so this is also why I think there's so many of these so-called mass shootings, which as far as I've been able to see, the ones that I looked into, all of them have been staged event. And from at least Sandy Hook and onwards, they haven't even, they haven't even been real events. They've used crisis actors and this, even the same people. I mean, it's so sloppy. Do you know, in the old days, these conspiracies like JFK and so on, they had a massive budget. There was at least a year of preparation. The people were really skilled and so on. But what's coming out nowadays when it comes to false flag, it's so sloppy, such a mess, so badly done. Low, do you know, like, so I think it's a sure sign that they're getting very desperate, which is great, I think. Super, super. The more the merrier, you know, because we need to expose this, because if they get their will through, this world will not be a nice place to be. That is for sure. But I am, like always, super, super optimistic when it comes to the future. And I have no doubt that we will come out super good on the other end.
Right. And I mean, I just look back on history to see that no matter what happens, as bad as the tyrants of whatever age you want to look at become or became, you know, goodness always does win out in the end. And, you know, I'm not delusional. I know we've got some monumental challenges in front of us. But I'd agree with you. At least around the world, it seems like many people in other nations are waking up to what the United States, Britain, Israel, what these heroic fighters for freedom, as we want to call ourselves, what we've really been doing. The rest of the world is waking up. Other nations are walking away from the United States, the dollar, as best they can. And in America, sure enough, onesies and twosies here and there, people are asking questions. And I agree. I think that with that being said, that's putting these people who are in charge on their heels. They're becoming worried. They're getting scared. And I start to feel like this is, maybe 1995 all over again, where you've already had the Ruby Ridge incident. You've already had Waco incident. You've got Patriot Movement exploding. You've got people wanting to join the militia. People are upset at the United States federal government. And what did they do? They pull off epic false flag until a few years later, Oklahoma City. And what did they do? They blamed it on the Patriots. They quelled the dissent. They quieted everybody down. They pointed at the new boogeyman, bad guy for the people to get scared of. Then they hit us with 9/11 a few years later to justify the never-ending war on terror and all of that. But let me ask you this, Ole, as far as the telltale signs, because, you know, I saw Sandy Hook as it happened, and to this day I have not spent hours upon hours researching it like I have with other false flags, because just looking at the great breakdown from my fellow hosts and independent writers and things like that out there who are calling it as they see it, exposing it, that's made it easy to see this for what it is. But also, I just see so many signs that just to see like how the media is portraying it, how the puppet politicians are using it to further their agenda. Obviously, it's a false flag. Like, I don't even need to look at the crisis actors or the fact that we don't have proof anyone was killed there or any of that. Just seeing how they're using this event to further their agenda to disarm the American people. Can you give us some signs that you've come across in your research as far as telltale signs to know for sure, like, this is a false flag? Can you elaborate on that for the audience?
How I can see that it's a false flag. For one thing is that the police or the actions that follows, like if you or I do something awful, or we throw a rock in a shop window or something like that, within a few minutes the police will be there and grab us. But many times when these assassinations happens and so on, the it's almost like the police force is on total standby. Mm-hmm. Now I'm not talking about the staged events where everything is staged. I'm talking if they do an assassination, a real one, then it is very obvious if you look at it that there will be a delay, so that the people who committed the atrocity will have the time to get away. Once they're out of the way, boom, in goes the whole police force, and they will look in all the wrong places, really intense, and make absolute sure that whoever the assassins, the team of hitmen, get out, and boom, in we come, and then close the whole thing up.
Sounds like Watertown, Massachusetts.
It's the same. I tell you, I can give you a very clear template of how one of these things is carried out, if you want.
Go ahead.
What do you want, a bombing or a mass shoot? A bomb. Let's go for a bombing.
Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, we say a bombing. The thing is that I think we spoke about this last time as well. They use this problem reaction solution method. Like if I, the president of a country, just want a super armed police force, militant, with no rules, that they can do whatever they want, kill anyone they want, kick in your door and have tanks in the streets and surveillance cameras everywhere. I mean, a lot like you are having at the moment. If I in a country like, for instance, where I'm living in Spain, if I just did that, if I was the one in power, I would have lots and lots of problems with the population. I would have riots. I would have the demonstrations, I would have guerrilla movements, I would have financial boycotts from other countries, I would have all of these problems. So what I do instead is I create a problem to get a reaction from the population so that I can move forward with the solution. Okay? So, and the thing we chose this time, I mean, it goes into trends. It used to be airplane hijackings. Nowadays, it's bombs, mostly bombs.
And I think on top of that, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but it's just, I agree with you wholeheartedly, it is the Hegelian dialectic. I mean, they did that with the drug war. They do that with the terrorism threat. They do that with anything they can conceivably use to create the problem, understand, they already are going to understand what our reaction will be, and then they come in and present the solution. And I think if we look at history, we see that time and time and time again, that's how they operate. So I just want to throw that in there, Ole. I didn't mean to interrupt you, though. Keep going.
No, this is exactly the science you should be looking for, because it's used on such a regular basis, and it's used to trick the population into thinking that it was the deed of someone else instead of seeing the real agenda, what's going on. Mm-hmm. Okay, so to do a thing like this, I need to create a problem. And these days, this problem very often consists of a bomb. This bomb needs to be placed in a public place. It needs to do a lot of damage, and it needs to horrific damages to, and there you handpick especially women and children. These are the main things that you focus on to get the strongest possible emotional reaction from the population. It needs to be emotional. You should not use the thing you've got between your ears. It's the emotions you're looking for.
Right.
And so what I do is I secretly place a bomb in a public place, so that the reason why it should be public is that then everybody will be threatened. You know, it can be near a train station, a big center, shopping center, or anything.
Nowhere is safe, right?
Exactly. That's the whole idea. In the meantime, while I get the bomb prepared, I start preparing a patsy, and the patsy can be just anyone. If it's a group of people, I take somebody I have problems with anyway. And nowadays, it can be truth seekers or peacemakers or whatever. So I secretly, I start preparing the subconscious of the population, saying, you know, these truth seekers, they say that they want peace, but actually what they're doing is that they're collecting arms and they're preparing an uprising and they're preparing to do mass shootings or whatever, you know, something that is so absurd, has absolutely nothing to do with the truth. But I start preparing through media that I control to a large extent, so that the subconscious of the population will be prepared.
Okay. Right.
I also prepare evidence that would point that way, and they always do it so ridiculously. If it's the Muslims they want to point out, that you will find like the Quran or suicide scarves or, you know, membership cards of the Islamic Revolutionary Army or something really, really, you know, low budget, really bad, low quality type of evidence, but it's pointing straight to that group. Okay, so I got the group prepared, I got the evidence prepared. Then also it's very important that I put together an investigation that consists of my people that I control. So, and this is an investigation that is on standby, meaning that as soon as the bomb explodes, they move in and knock out all normal, honest, decent police officers and detectives and so on. So, and their job is, this investigation is to point in all other direction than towards the real truth. They will point to, and specifically they will point towards the patsy. The patsy, the patsy, the patsy, the patsy. That's the one. They will totally disregard witnesses. They will even threaten and harass them, and they will manipulate with the evidence. They will write thousands of pages of documents saying absolutely nothing and so on.
Right.
So that's the job of the investigation.
To whitewash the truth, to bring the quote-unquote truth that they want people to remember and be taught in school and pretty much...
Exactly.
Right, I'm with you there.
Exactly. So the whole point of the so-called investigation is to lid on, you know, to cover it up at all costs. Okay, so we're getting close to when the time has come for this bomb to explode. everything is prepared, and on the day when it's supposed to happen, I will arrange for a drill. Very often they use drills at the exact same location as the real event.
Right.
They will have a drill. And one of the reasons I think they do this is to be able to transport the explosives and get it all set in place so that no one will really notice them. They will think, oh, it's part of the drill. Why are there so many people in uniforms? Why are there bomb cars? Why are there all of this? Because it's part of the drill. Okay, fine. Also, one of the things they use this drill for is, I think, to get the patsy in location, that the patsy does not know that he or she, or it's always a he, that he is the one that will take the fall for it. He thinks he's part of a drill or a film
right.
shoot or whatever, but that will get that person into position where they can blame it.
The point of no return, right? And hearing you say that, I remember the original World Trade Center bombing where the patsy figured out what the FBI was doing. And he actually recorded the phone calls with the FBI and said, hey, I'm not going to make a real bomb. And he ended up leaving the country.
No, the FBI in the States, the FBI are more or less 100% the ones that are training these people, that are supplying them with bombs and giving them the education with the bombs and so on. The FBI is deeply involved in all of these false flags, I would say. Anyway, so we're getting close now. The drill is on. At the same time, I have airborne troops that will circle around the area so that if there's any kind of uprising or things that will get out of control, they will be able to take care of it. Also, I will knock out the communication system when this happens. And it's blamed often on, well, it was the blast from the bomb that just took out everything, or on the World Trade Center, it was the radio masts on top of the buildings that took it down. At the JFK assassination, the whole telephone communication system was down for a whole hour in the whole of the United States. And the reason why they do this is to be sure that they can be the ones deciding what story will be sent out in the world. So they try to do this also. Anyway, the time has come for the bomb to blow up. And they never do it during the night or in late evening or something like that. Or they always try to do it early morning when you're most vulnerable emotionally. So they're waiting to around maybe 8:30, 9 o'clock, when you're on your way to work, you've just been with your kids to the daycare center or the kindergarten or so on, and you're on your way somewhere. That's the time to hit, and then boom, off goes the bomb. All these awful, awful images are spread in media with blown up children and women and all of this. And at the same time, the reporters, within minutes, they will start pointing at the patsy. It's incredible how good they are at this, but very, very early on, they will start pointing. That's the way to look.
Right.
Look that way, look that way, look that. They are the ones to blame. So the problem was the bomb. The reaction is from the people will just be, oh my God, this is awful, awful, awful. Something needs to be done.
Right.
Something needs to be done with, what did I say, truth seekers or peacemakers or whatever. These truth makers, truth seekers, we need to stop this truth movement, you know. We need to stop it. And they turn towards me, who they elected to deal with these kind of problems. And I then will come with my solution for their protection, saying, I can deal with these truth seekers, but I tell you, it's a hard, rough type of bunch. Like, so I need to be violent with them. And people will just say, do it, do it. So I move in my tanks, I move in my police, I give them all these rights, and I give them a bazooka, you name it, flying drones, whatever. And people will just applaud, and I will become a hero dealing with this, these patsies, whatever the truth seekers or whatever that we made up that they were. I would become the hero, and people would applaud what is being done, up with the flag, and saying, wait, your national anthem and all of these things. And not seeing what actually happened was that I just moved forward this military agenda. And what I do is nowadays also they love this martial law type of thing to prepare the people for what they are planning to come. So I move in with all these soldiers and police officers that looks like a Robocop and so on. And what I do is I get rid of this group, I kill them, or I put them away. Very often they're killed on a very early stage, or they get shot in the head so they can't speak or whatever, at least so they can't give any type of testimonies or things like that. I get them out of the way, and then what I do then is I leave the soldiers there for, once again, for the protection of the population. I will leave them there for like 2-3 weeks, the tanks, the everything, so that people get used to it. And then I withdraw slowly, but I leave like 20% for the protection of the people. And that was the whole point, was to jack it up one more step of the super surveillance, more cameras, more need for protection, more need for more police, more need for less liberties for the population, and so on.
Right.
This is standard
before
operation.
You know it, the new normal is troops on the streets, or in the case of America, cameras everywhere, all phone calls being monitored, all financial transactions being monitored and stored. You know, you have no Fourth Amendment, and that's just the new normal. And the people who are out there trying to bring attention to this are already being demonized as the bad guys, the crazies, conspiracy theorists, or whatever. And Ole, you brought up so many good points. I want to throw one last topic at you here with the time we have left to get your take on this, because I'm with you. I agree with your breakdown. I think it's phenomenal. I feel like, you know, as far as the media, these people, that one of the prerequisites to have these false flags, they've already got to kind of plant the seed in the mind of the masses. They've already got to prep the masses, whether it be subconsciously or just demonization on the television, to get them ready. So when it happens, they're already prepared to blame whoever they're going to be told to blame. And what I'm getting at here, Ole, is that I see a real danger, because in America, we've got a lot of people who are starting to wake up, and they are hopping mad. They are very upset at the lies they've been fed for so many years, at the chaos we've been causing around the world with our never-ending wars, the police state, the agenda to disarm the American people, and the Americans who see this becoming very upset, and they're going out there protesting and bullhorning and literally, you know, making videos, shooting guns and come and take it, and just really trying to confront the feds or I don't know, whatever you want to call them, confronting them, saying, hey, you are not going to take my guns. We will not allow this. And really kind of broadcasting that anger and putting it out there. And I feel like the danger that those folks are doing, Ole, is that they're already setting themselves up to be the patsies, because that kind of stuff scares the masses. What do you think about my breakdown there?
I think you're spot on, and I think that is absolutely it's such a wrong way to go. Violence has never solved anything, and brutality has never solved anything. It just accelerates. And if you study revolutions over the history of the world, revolution, if you break down the word revolution, it repeats what is already there. And if you meet these powers with violence, for one thing, it will just justify what they do, and
right,
make it even, they will have even more reason to do even more awful things to the population. I just want to say there's a lot of these provocateurs as well that are not normal people. They look like normal people, but they're there to do these things, to stir it up, so that they can go in with more violence and more forceful methods and so
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely.
I really think that the way to go, and I cannot emphasize this enough, is the way Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, the yogic way of non-violence, truthfulness, non-greed, all of these beautiful ethic, moral ways of looking upon, and compassion and forgiveness. This is the way to go to move forward. Because if we go the violent way, we're doomed to just repeat it. It will just get worse and worse.
Right. Not only are we stooping to their level, fighting the hatred and the anger with hatred and anger, but just to reiterate what you said, right, we're not going to accomplish anything. And I think that, you know, as some people may hear this and think, oh, that's kind of, you know, pie in the sky, la-la land, like, yeah, right, that's not going to do anything. I feel like, Ole, those are some of the hardest things to do right now in 2013 and moving into 2014 is to have love for our fellow man, to be compassionate, to stay calm and collected. I'm guilty of being a human and getting mad and doing things that I shouldn't have done or said, you know, out of emotion. But I think that just kind of is a testament to what you're saying, the fact that it is so hard to love and to be 100% peaceful, nonviolent, and to try to rise up above this stuff, because no matter how many people do this, the fact is, if individuals start committing to that and doing it in their everyday lives, once enough of them start, real change will happen. Ole Damagord, it's always great talking with you. Did you have anything else that you wanted to throw down tonight?
I would like to mention my website is called lightandconspiracies.com, and if anyone feels like it, there's a donation button there as well, which I would greatly appreciate if someone used. But also I would like to finish with a prayer that I'm not a religious person, but I am a spiritual person, and I truly believe in what you said also with the non-violence, that is the way to go. And there is one prayer that I really love, and it says, may the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May everyone, and especially the ones who hurt us, be filled with peace and joy, love and light. Victory to that light. That is the way to go, because the people also who are doing these things, they believe that they're doing the right thing. And it's for them also to wake up and to see that, my God, what are we doing to this world? It is time to stop this madness. It's time to stop it. And it's only by compassion and love and forgiveness on the other side of exposing the truth that we can move this world forward. I just want to say also that the native Indians, they say that this is such a special time, and that we, the people who are now alive, that we are the strongest of the strong when it comes to souls, that our ancestors has picked us. We are the chosen ones that have been chosen to come down to earth at this specific point, meeting and facing all of these challenges. So it's actually a privilege to be alive at this moment. It's not a doom and gloom time or, God, I'm so depressed. So it's time to wake up. Stand in truth, do not bend, but do not hit back either. You have to be very, very brave and courageous in doing this, and raise the energy, raise it, because by lifting your energy, it will be harder and harder for this group to control you. This is why they're so focused on pumping you through the TV and other media to keep you down, your energy down, low, just pumping your head full with fear to keep you low in the vibration where they can control you. So by filling yourself with gratitude and love for everything you got around you, you lift. I know this sounds like New Age, wee-oo, but I tell you, this is the truth, and they're very aware of it. So they're trying to keep you scared and paranoid and all of these things to be able to control you.
Right. And so, on top of what you're saying, Ole, I mean, people can think what they want, but the fact is there are two emotions, fear and love, and they do have different frequencies, and they do attract energy to those frequencies. And that is scientific fact. So folks can look that up. I'm very interested in learning more about that as well. But Ole, beautiful words. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me here. Folks, lightonconspiracies.com is the website. The book, It was coup d'etat in slow motion, over 20 years of phenomenal research in a book. It's the holidays. I'm not into consumerism, but if you're going to buy some gifts, I can't think of too many other things that would be better than coup d'etat in slow motion, or if you feel so compelled to give a donation to Ole over at lightonconspiracies.com. He is 100% independent and funded by good folks like you out there, so please consider that. Ole Damagort, folks, lightsonconspiracy.com.